If you're listening to A Closer Look, I'm Rose Scott.
And I'm Dennis O'Hare. You've probably read the headlines recently about two women, one in Gwinnett County, another in Flowery Branch, who have inexplicably contracted infections from flesh-eating bacteria. Now, as we mentioned in a recent conversation on A Closer Look, those infections are rare, but they can be deadly or cause the loss of limbs. And today we're joined by a Georgia woman who got an extremely rare case of the bacteria after a zip line accident back in 2012, Amy Copeland is here to tell us her story of survival, recovery, and some new adventures in her life. Amy Copeland, welcome to A Closer Look. Good to have you.
Thank you so much for having me.
Now, obviously, we want to hear about your experience and what you've been up to lately, but you, as well as the rest of us, have probably heard or seen the stories we just mentioned, some two quite recent cases, new ones here in Georgia. Did it surprise you to hear that there were two more?
I'm never really surprised to hear about them, but I was certainly, my heart definitely went out to the women. I have been able to meet one of the women that recently got the necrotizing fasciitis, and my dad has reached out to another family. So it's always shocking to hear, but I'm always glad to be of assistance and be a resource for people that are experiencing it.
Do you expect that, I mean, did you get any feedback? Obviously, they have a long way to go at this point. They are holding their own at last check. Did you get any sense of whether they'll be leaning on you for that kind of resource that you talked about?
Both women, from my experiences with them, have been extremely positive and have been extremely determined and have asked a lot of questions and have definitely shown interest in continuing your relationship. So I think definitely we will continue to talk and to feed off of each other.
And Amy, your story of recovery, you know, some call it survival, but all that you've been working to do, not only just as a spokesperson now, but just in continuing your recovery, has got to be very inspiring for those two women.
I think absolutely. When I was first injured, I wanted to meet other people who had been through what I'd been through to see what they're doing, to see that they're having children, they have jobs, they're driving, they're leading normal and very fulfilling lives. And so I think that I'm also an example for them, to see everything that I'm doing and to see what will be possible for them.
You mentioned that you wanted to talk to other people. So you had someone who to sort of guide you through to say, hey, you can get through this and you can return and have a good quality of life. That was important.
I did, and it was extremely.
Amy, I want to go back a little bit, and I know you've probably told this story numerous occasions, but the accident and the hours and days after, does it seem like you can replay this and like it was yesterday for you?
Absolutely, yes. It does seem like it was just yesterday. I remember getting off my shift at the local breakfast restaurant, the Sunnyside Cafe, and being invited over to a friend's place and wading through the stream and stumbling upon that old homemade zip line. And I remember us each taking a go on the zip line and, you know, on my second go, hearing two horrible sounds, first the zip line snapping and then my body hitting the sharp rocks below. And the days and hours that followed were a little blurry. And most of that I just know from being told by other people.
And that's the part I think a lot of people try to imagine it, is that because of the infections and because of some of the drugs used to treat the infections, you probably weren't aware of everything that they had to do. So what went through your mind when you became conscious and learned the full extent of this?
Well, you know, I would come to in the hospital and I would ask my parents day after day, where am I and how did I get here? And every day I would kind of have to accept that answer again of, you know, your leg is missing. But the day that it finally sunk in was the day that my hands had necrotized as well. And they were dark purple and they were curled up almost into fists. And my dad lift them up for me to see. And he said, these don't look healthy, do they? We're going to have to remove these too. After just telling me, you know, you were in a zipline injury, you don't have a leg anymore. And I just remember seeing the hands and it was a very traumatic moment for me, but seeing them and thinking, you know what, he's right. I can't live like this, and I want to live. I had a very distinctive drive to live and to continue to fight for life. And so all I could do, I was intubated, all I could do was mouth, let's do this, and went forward from there and been fighting for life ever since.
It sounds as if you're saying that the choice was very clear to you, that it, in one sense, it wasn't a difficult decision to make, and yet at another level, it had to be an agonizing decision. decision to make? Was it both things at the same time?
At first, it was more of an instinctual response. Like I said, I was on a lot of medications. It wasn't until a couple months later when I was taking off all the painkillers and all of the medications that I was on that the reality of the situation and the future that I was going to have to deal with really sunk in. And that was a dark time for me for several weeks. You know, I was wheeling around the Shepherd Center in my wheelchair. They just stuck a box of Kleenex in the back of my chair, so it was permanently on deck because I was just very emotional during that time period.
You know, I mean, we spoke with Dr. Amy Kirby of Emory about education and prevention. And do you think more research would also help in better treatment as well from when these accidents happen?
Absolutely. If you look at the timeline on necrotizing fasciitis, I mean, I had it for 72 hours before my leg rotted. That is a very long time to have necrotizing fasciitis. And the National Necrotizing Fasciitis Foundation website has lots of memorials on there and shows that people can die after just 24 hours. So I think it's very important that we're able to detect this. A lot of the symptoms are very similar to the flu. So knowing what to look for, I think, is important moving forward.
The treatment that you received, and obviously at the time people didn't know this was going to happen, but the treatment that you received, did they take you straight to an emergency room? Or?
Yes, I was actually immediately life-flighted to Doctors Hospital in Augusta, where they have the hyperbaric chamber, which was essential in getting rid of the bacteria that I had contracted.
If you're just joining us, we're talking with Amy Copeland. You might recall she survived a severe case of necrotizing fasciitis, or commonly called flesh-eating bacteria, after a zipline accident in 2012. It did cost her several limbs and her hands. So you talked about that timeline and how important that is. So obviously it begins with the person who suffers the injury. So if someone gets a cut while in the water or anywhere near a time when he or she is in the water, what would your message be to them? Because they might think, oh, it's just a little nick, you know?
I would certainly. I'm not one to be overly paranoid, even now. I'm not a germaphobe, and if I get a little cut and then I get in water, I'm not freaking out. But if you do get a cut and then you're throwing up and having gastro symptoms and weakness in the body and things that seem like the flu, that would be the time, I would say, to seek medical attention.
And that can happen within how long a period of time again?
As little as 24 hours.
Amy, it's so important to have support, obviously, from family and friends. Talk a little bit about how helpful that was for you during all of this.
I think social supports, hands down, has been the most important protective factor in my own mental well-being. Having people around not only to help with the day-to-day tasks when you're starting to figure out how to live a life, you know, there's a lot of environmental changes that need to be made, and a lot of times that requires help from other people, but even more importantly, just having someone there to process feelings and emotions with and to validate you and say, hey, yes, the situation does suck, but we're going to get through it together.
And people that you didn't even know were reaching out to you. I was reading and seeing a lot of television coverage on your road to recovery. People just pulling for you on Facebook, on Twitter. That had to be helpful as well.
Absolutely. I mean, having the support of the community, not only in really practical ways, like helping me build an addition to my house, helping me have accessible living, but also just going to the grocery store and being stopped by people who say, hey, you're really awesome, and I see what you're doing, and I appreciate that. It really means a lot to me.
For all of the boost that gave you, and you probably couldn't have come through it without it, you mentioned there were some dark times. Did you ever feel... it sounds odd, but did you ever feel bad or guilty about that? Because, oh, wow, all these people are supporting me. All these people are doing all these wonderful things, and I'm really down here. Did you feel conflicted about that at any point?
I never felt conflicted about the negative emotions that I was experiencing, because I think I have a background in psychology. I recognize that anybody in my situation would feel the same way. That being said, I talk to a lot of people that have gone through similar traumatic injuries and haven't received near as the support that I have. And so sometimes when I talk to them, there's certainly some guilt that creeps in where why do I get all this? And these people are suffering so much and struggling so much and haven't received any of the benefits that I have. So that's definitely a tough thing that I have to deal with.
And it sounds as if, from what you said earlier about being a resource, that you want to be part of that support for people who may not have had the widespread public backing that you got.
Absolutely. I definitely feel that, you know, if there's anything that I can do, if there's any way to use my own notoriety to help bring attention to what others are dealing with, or just to be a friend to them and help them to feel the same support that I have, that's my goal for helping other people.
And you're continuing on with your life. You drive, you're still active, you're a great athlete. Before, you're still a great athlete, and you're also doing a lot of speaking engagements, so you're very busy.
Yes, absolutely. Getting my second master's degree now in social work, along with, you know, just living my life. I have a custom-made tricycle that I'm working on. I've also been doing whitewater kayaking with Ace Kayaking School, numerous speaking engagements, working with different nonprofit organizations to support them, and just supporting the community of people with disabilities in any way possible.
And you talk to kids too, and I know that that has to be a great inspiration for them. What do you tell them about your own personal story?
The things that I've mainly learned that I try to convey to my audiences is the power of perseverance, the power of having a will. Where there's a will, there's a way. The power of compassion, how helping other people is one of the most healing things that you can do for yourselves. These are the two biggest takeaways that I try to give my listeners.
What do you think the future holds for not just education and prevention, but as we mentioned before, treatment? In other words, trying to keep people from having their case get as far as yours did once the infection happens, because the bacteria is out there, but cases like yours are still rare.
My hope is that with all of the media attention coming to these cases, that people will be more aware of this bacteria and the tendency of this bacteria to cause people to go septic, so that people know the signs and the symptoms, and that in the future we can be more aware of that, especially in our medical facilities. But also I have great hopes for technology and for people that go through this, that they can continue to have successful and fulfilling lives.
So looking back on it, you think still this was just one of those things? Is it possible to reduce it to that? It was just a freak thing?
I kind of think so, but I also, in the back of my mind, I think everything happens for a reason. I have a very large belief in the greater picture. You know, sometimes I ask myself, if I could go back and time travel and warn myself that this was going to happen, would I? And I think that from everything that's come of this and how amazing my life is now, my answer would be no. I wouldn't warn myself, because I would go through it a million more times.
And Amy, you still are on the road and since to recovery. What types of therapy or what types of treatment are you still going through now?
I'm still having to go to the process. The test pretty frequently. I'm working on the legs that I'm wearing today in the studio, which is my sea leg and my baloney prosthesis. So now I'm up to about 2 miles walking with these. Also, I've recently been fit by the guys at BioDesigns. Randy Alley set me up with some eye limbs through a touch bionic. So I have prostheses for my arms that I'm continuing to practice with and just trying to be as functional and independent as possible.
And from one athlete to another, you know, we tend to be, we want it. We want to keep working at it and working at it, but also you have to pace yourself as well. So is that difficult for you?
Patience is definitely the name of the game. There's a whole lot of hurry up and waiting, and a whole lot of just seeing what happens and being flexible.
And for the rest, for your personal life, I mean, this brought you a lot of attention. It brought you some difficult times as well. But personally, you know, you don't have to reveal anything that you don't want to, but are you in a better place personally than you were?
Absolutely. I think you can't grow if you don't struggle, and I've struggled a lot, and I've also grown a lot, and I have a lot more understanding of the world and myself and others, and it's just made me, I think, blossom even more and grow into the person that I've always wanted to become.
All right. We've been speaking with Amy Copeland. She survived a rare and extreme case of flesh-eating bacteria from an accident that happened in 2012. She's off to a great new chapter in her life. Amy, thanks so much for coming in and sharing your story. We really appreciate it. Thank you for having me.
I appreciate it.
Can we go kayaking with you?
Absolutely. Let's set a date.
Let's go.
I'm not the greatest swimmer, if you've heard earlier in the segment. Everybody just told all my business. But no, great. Thanks so much for coming by.
Thank you.